The eyes of the combat sports world were focused on Mayweather Hatton this past Saturday night, but a couple of miles down the road, the UFC hit a virtual home run with the Ultimate Fighter finale, a slew of great fights topped by the amazing Clay Guida versus Roger Huerta fight. And we've invited Ryan Harkness, our good friend from FightLinker.com, to discuss all things Ultimate Fighter and preview the upcoming WEC show. And Ryan had a lot at stake in the Guida Huerta fight, much publicized bet with Kid Nate of BloodyElbow.com, where if Guida would win, Kid Nate would have to shave his eyebrows, and if Huerta would win, Ryan would have to replicate a famous photograph by UFC ring girl Edith Lorente, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, where she's sort of posing nude with grapes. And needless to say, the photo has been published. So, Ryan, thanks so much for joining us here today. And now, several hours after taking that photo, how are you feeling?
I feel very, very dirty. So I tell you the truth. It was, people were trying to say that after I was recreating Two Boys, One Cup, that this wouldn't be a problem, but I don't think they realize how much worse getting naked and having naked photos taken of you is than just pretending to poop a chocolate bar. There's really no comparison. So it was not a fun Sunday night taking those photos, and it was not a fun morning putting up that picture and just being like, oh, boy.
Now, who was the brave soul that actually took the photograph? Was it your partner in crime over at FightLinker.com?
Yeah, it was Jake.
All right,
so Jake, that wasn't much of a fun thing for him either. But we got it through. We got it pretty quick, and I got to say, side by side, the angles work pretty well. So we're about as happy as we can be given the situation.
Now, you look pretty good in the photo. Did you have to do any cropping, photoshopping, or is that the actual real deal, Ryan Harkness in full flesh?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm not cross-eyed, and this is the one thing. I put it out there, and, I got to expect it. I mean, we talk shit about everyone, so, we put it out there, and everyone's like, you're fatty, fat, fat. But I'm like, listen, I don't really have cross-eyed. I don't have cross eyes, and I don't, and so that should tell you that I'm, posing. So I crossed my eyes, and I blew my belly out to look like I was pregnant, and, now I'm getting the inevitable fatty, fat, fats. For which, whatever. I don't really mind. It doesn't bother me.
Now, you have a potentially huge fight against Sam Kaplan that we've chronicled on JerryPark.com that will hopefully be going down in 2008. Do you think that this now gives Sam, some extra ammunition against you? I mean, now this is the first time he gets to see you, without a shirt. He mentioned that he's never seen you fight or even face-to-face before. Were you at all concerned about putting out this photo to try to, maybe now Sam has some more, for lack of a better term, homework on you?
No, I don't. As I said, we were basically fooling around. So it's not really accurate, it's not an accurate depiction of really anything. So if he wants to take that and say, excellent, Ryan's out of shape, Ryan is, Ryan's not going to be as much of a challenge, then that's all the better for me. The more motivated he is, the harder he's going to be to put away. So the easier he thinks I am as an opponent, the less he's going to work and the easier he's going to be.
All right,
that's my approach.
Why were you so confident that Clay Guida would defeat Roger Huerta?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. We don't do bets that aren't, possible going both ways. Like, it's not like we wouldn't have done Anderson Silva versus Nate Marquardt with anybody because we don't think it's a fair bet. We did Sam Stout versus Spencer Fisher because that was evenly matched. We did that with Luke from Bloody Elbow, and we lost that one too. And we went into this one here. I mean, we basically said that this is something that could go either way because mainly, as I said before, Clay Guida is basically a natural lightweight. He should be down in featherweight. He doesn't have many finishing skills. I mean, he has a habit of getting fucked over by the refs or not by the refs, by the judges. So it's like, do I think it was a sure bet? Absolutely not. That's the reason that we made the bet because if there wasn't a chance that it was going to go both ways, then, there's no fun in it, really.
Now,
so we didn't go into it with the idea of it being, a shoe-in to win.
despite the fact that you lost, you can't deny that it was an unbelievable fight. If you can, describe the roller coaster ride of emotions, because other than anyone associated with Guida and Huerta, you had a lot at stake in this bout. I mean, you know, you have a day job, and the internet these days, who knows who's looking at things. So you're sitting there, and at first, Clay Guida is putting on a great performance, and it seems as though he's going to end up defeating Roger Huerta, and then out of nowhere in the third round, you know, he taps out. What are you thinking as the fight progresses?
Well, you know, the first round, it was tricky because we were live blogging as well. So I was staring at the computer, or staring at the television screen and typing on the computer and trying to get everything done. But to me, it looked like, you know, everybody was saying that Guida won round one and two. But round one, to me, seemed pretty even, because at the very least Huerta proved that he had the tools to hang. You know, he was doing a better job of striking. He was looking very dangerous on his feet, but Guida was getting the advantage on the ground. So I left round one, and Jake was asking, who do you think won? And Jake was saying that Guida won. I was like, man, Huerta is looking a lot more dangerous than I expected him to be. This could be bad. Second round, you know, Guida continues the control on the ground, and he really just sets the idea that when things get hairy on the feet, takes it to the ground. So I'm thinking, okay, he's got himself, you know, he's got himself a formula, and he's going to stick to it. I think he should be able to roll to a win on it. And then in the third round, things just went, let's talk about the end of the second round, where he gets Huerta down, knocks him with, knocks him with that solid punch, right?
Right, right.
That knocked him on his butt, and then he jumps on him. And this is where you got to, you know, wonder with Guida. I mean, he gave away the fight by not being able to finish at that point. So, I mean, I love him to death, but that guy's got to work on his skills. Those crazy monkey bops that he was throwing at the end, just, I don't even know where to start. I mean, they looked good, but they weren't doing anything.
Yeah, absolutely. It seemed as though it was deja vu all over again. And as you mentioned, Guida always comes out pumped, always comes out energized, and then for some reason or another has an inability to finish his fight. So now, what do you make of Clay Guida? I mean, performing well in a fight can only take you so far. At some point, you have to finish them. Do you think that he will maybe get dropped by the UFC? I mean, we've seen guys lose back-to-back fights and have problems there. We've seen guys, you know, lose two out of the last three and then get dropped. What do you make of his future in the UFC?
Well, you know, I'd say that the UFC would be stupid to drop him. I don't think they're going to drop him, but it wouldn't surprise me if they basically said, go out, take two or three fights, and beat a bunch of guys outside of the UFC and come back. It's like what happened with Sam Stout. I mean, they just put Sam Stout on the headlining bout of an Ultimate Fight Night card. It was an awesome battle. Sam Stout lost, and now he's back in TKO. He's fighting in TKO. So, to me, it seems like it might be the same situation where the UFC is not letting these guys go, but they're, you know, if anybody needs a break to go and work on their confidence and fight a couple scrubs, I think it's Guida. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do that. And the other option is take him down to featherweight, put him in the WEC.
Right. And how about Roger Huerta? I mean, a guy who was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, a lot of hype about him. Some people had said the jury was still out on him, hadn't been really tested in the cage thus far. I mean, he had a tough opponent in Doug Evans at the last Ultimate Fighter finale, but really no one to the level of Clay Guida. He comes out on top on Saturday night. Is it official? Is Roger Huerta the real deal?
I think so. I see. I draw a lot of comparisons between the Huerta-Guida fight and the Sanchez-Parisian fight. And I think that Diego Sanchez has been a name off of Carol Parisian, and I think Huerta just did the same thing off of Guida. So, and at this point, you know, he's legitimate. He's there. I mean, even though Diego's lost the last two fights, people still consider him, you know, just as legitimate as any of the other top guys in the welterweight division, and that's something to be said. So I think that no matter what happens, Huerta will be taken seriously from now on, unless he drops a couple really sloppy decisions to some lower-tier talent.
And now let's talk about the rest of the card. When I first saw the official card, I got to admit I was a little disappointed just because it was mostly filled with the Ultimate Fighter guys, and let's be real, most of these guys were largely untested in their MMA careers, you know, save for Mac Danzig. And, you know, needless to say, they came out and gave us a lot to talk about. I mean, John Copenhaver, Jared Rollins, an unbelievable fight, Ben Saunders, Dan Barrera. Were you overall pleased with, you know, the way the entire night unfolded?
It started up pretty crappy. Like the Barrera-Saunders fight, I thought was just a terrible fight between two guys with no weapons in their toolbox. So I mean, it was the overall event was good, but you know, I would say there was a lot of lopsided fights in that one. Like then and you know, Mac Danzig versus Tommy Spear is a perfect example of that. And I mean, you just got too many instances where either you got two guys who don't know what they're doing, just beating each other up as best they can, which is not very well, or you've got one guy completely clobbering the other guy, which is sure entertaining to watch, but, you know, I think the only legitimate war on the card past Guida Huerta was the Rollins-Copenhaver fight, and that was a really good one, but, you know, I say it really showed that the talent pool was lacking this year.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that the show wasn't good. It just means that it was, you know, it was a different level than what I'm used to.
Do you agree with me when you're watching these guys like this past Saturday, where you kind of get the feel that you're watching amateur MMA because they're wearing the Ultimate Fighter shorts? They kind of match each other. They look the same as they did on the show when it looked very amateurish. It just doesn't feel like a big time UFC event. And I personally think that they should have them fight just on some sort of, you know, undercard, not televised. We can watch it on UFC.com if we want. But when you have a 3-hour spike show and we've watched these guys for the last 16, 17 weeks, whatever it was, give us the real fighters, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess here's the problem, is they got themselves in a trap, is that then I think they probably will have realized this, and hopefully they'll have fixed it for the next season, is the idea that this year they really got a bunch of low-talent guys, and hopefully and because of that, we ended up with kind of a weird product that didn't really sell, because, you know, this was known as the drama show. It wasn't really known as the fighting show. I mean, do we remember any specific fight from the Ultimate Fighter this season that stuck out in our minds as a great fight? And I don't think so. So, I mean, you know, hopefully next year they realize that they can't just keep stacking it with nobodies. You know, they've got to get people with more than 10 fights. Because, I mean, if you want these guys, like Dana White's always saying, we're you know, the most relevant show alongside American Idol, and he says that because all of the American Idol winners go on to be huge pop superstars, and he's saying that all of the tough winners go on to be huge stars too. But I mean, it doesn't mean anything if the rest of these guys, you know, like, I mean, how many people from this season are going to be around in 2 or 3 years? So I mean, I don't think many.
Yeah, probably only Mac Danzig. But you mentioned the Ultimate Fighter 7, and this past weekend, the worst kept secret in MMA was officially announced when Dana White told the world that Forrest Griffin and Quinton Jackson are going to be the coaches for Tough 7. This is an announcement that has a lot of people excited and upset at the same time, just because that means that the light heavyweight title belt will probably be on hold or not being defended until next summer, unless, as you've mentioned on your site, Dana goes through with his big plans to change Tough 7. What are your thoughts on Griffin and Rampage being the coaches for Tough 7, and any thoughts on what can be done to revamp this show that is kind of a lame duck right now?
Oh, man. Like, when I first started the blog, I wrote a couple articles on what they can do to fix Tough, and it's basically they gotta go somewhere completely different. They gotta get rid of the losers. No one wants to see the losers stick around after they lose. And they got to bring back challenges, so every episode it's more than just stupidity in the house and then a fight at the end. I mean the show doesn't need a shakeup. It needs variety in every episode. It needs some kind of hook. They should be bringing in, you know, special guests on each episode. You know, they should be traveling to different places and training with different people. There's 1,001 different things they could be doing. They could just be stealing ideas from other shows. You know, so I mean, there's so many things that they could do, and there's so many things that they're not going to do. I really hope that it isn't all just, you know, the same stuff from Dana White, where he says we're really going to change it, and then nothing happens. Because, I mean, the light heavyweight division is the marquee division. That's the big money division. That's, you know, all of your biggest fighters, all of your big money came from the light heavyweight division. Tito Ortiz, Chuck Liddell. Randy Couture was light heavyweight, and that's where he made his name. And there's so many big money guys. And if you don't have a title in there, then you know, it's hard to make things mean anything. So it's a really big gamble. And I mean, it could pay off really well. I mean, rebreathing life into Tough is probably the most important thing for the UFC, insofar as building more mainstream fan appeal. But I mean, the cost that they're going to be paying on the bottom line for pay-per-view buys is going to be huge.
Are you saying that you would like to see Willa Ford come back as a host of the show?
They need some women on that show, man. I don't think there's another show on Psych with less women on it. Even like the glimpses of the ring girl aren't enough. They got to do something serious, and they got to add some TNA back to that show because it's just gay.
What about Rampage Jackson? I mean, this is a guy who's very charismatic, very entertaining, and we've never really seen him in this type of format. We've seen what Forrest Griffin can do. He's great in front of the camera. Can he alone breathe that new life into the show, or will there inevitably have to be something else added to it?
There's got to be something else. I mean, everything's all well and good for watching it for a couple of episodes to see what Rampage is going to do. But I mean, it's what, 12 episodes?
Yeah.
You got to keep it interesting, you know? I mean, there's no way that his personality is going to keep me coming back for 12 episodes when past that it's the same formulaic crap. I mean, no matter what they do, unless they are consistently changing things from episode to episode, then, you know, it's not interesting to me. There's no surprises, you know? So
absolutely.
They say, oh, these guys are going to fight, you know, fight inside the house, or these guys annoy each other. And I'm like, you know, I've seen this 7 times already. It's just not interesting.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, as we've mentioned before, I actually used to work at Spike TV. So I sort of know what those new plans are, but I was sworn to secrecy as to what they're going to be. And I think you will be very happy, my friend.
Excellent.
I can say
that. I'm glad someone's been reading my website.
So let's move on to other big Zuffa news. It's going to be a big month for them. They just had the Ultimate Fighter finale, and this Wednesday is the WEC on Versus, a card that I am extremely excited for, and I think most MMA fans are as well. I mean, this one's stacked. 3 title fights on the televised portion of it. Another non-title fight between Cub Swanson and Jens Pulver, making his WEC debut. Do you share the same excitement as I do for WEC on Versus this Wednesday?
Absolutely. I'm super excited for it, but I'm just wondering why the hell it took them 4 months to do another WEC. It feels like, you know, back in the fall, they were back, I guess, near the end of the summer, they were ramping it up, and we had a couple of WEC shows, and it just disappeared. And now it's back, and 3 titles are on the line, plus Jens Pulver. And it just seems to me like for a company that doesn't have a really deep roster, it really seems like they're blowing their load on this one. Like, I have to wonder, is this some kind of test to see what happens when they put together a really good card, if they want to see that, you know, an amazing card draws the same amount of ratings as a mediocre card, or how it's going to work. But, I mean, to me, it doesn't make any sense why this card is so huge, why they stopped for 4 months and then they stuck everything onto this card. It just, I mean, to me, it's kind of strange. I just don't understand what they're getting at.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point, because it does seem as though they're blowing their load with this one, especially because they don't have pay-per-views. So you might want to save each title defense, you know, one per show. But I guess maybe they don't have a long contract with Versus. Who knows the reasoning behind it? But let's talk about the fights. Paulo Filho, a lot of people are saying that he's the best middleweight in the world. And here he is fighting in the WEC. Are you as confused as I am as to why Paulo is fighting in the WEC? Because it's no secret that the middleweight division is the weakest one in the UFC. And while we all know that they're trying to really build up the WEC as a separate brand and one just as strong as the UFC, it does seem very strange to me to put a guy like Paulo in this organization, which is clearly a second-tier league.
I think basically what it is that Paulo and Anderson Silva are from the same, well, not from the same, I guess, I'm not sure if they're in the same training camp, but they're basically like best buds. And they've talked about it many times before, and they said that it's, you know, very unlikely that they'll fight So I think that that one of the main reasons they brought Paulo into the WEC was because they were like, do you want to come in, take a title shot? And he was like, I'm not going to fight Anderson. So it's, I mean, what do you do with someone like that? Do you have a situation like with Wanderlei Silva and Shogun where it's just number one and number two and they don't fight each other? I mean, that won't really fly in America. So I think it was, you know, he gets the same amount of money to fight on the WEC cards, and he doesn't have to fight his good buddy who's holding the belt. Who knows what's going to happen down the line? But I think that was the initial reasoning behind it, was that, you know, put him here, let him develop, and this way we don't have these guys fighting each other. Because, you know, maybe they say, oh, they'll fight each other, but it'll have to be for, you know, an extra $200,000, $300,000. So, you know, what's the UFC supposed to say to that?
Did you have?
So I think that's.
Sorry, go ahead.
So I think that's the reasoning behind Paulo in the WEC. That's the only logical reason behind it, as far as I'm concerned.
Did you happen to catch their preview show Outside the Cage that aired last week?
I did watch it in preparation for being on this show and sounding educated.
Oh, that's great. Well, I thought, you know, we've all talked about 24/7 and what that has done to boxing, and you mentioned many times on your site that the UFC needs to start doing some kind of 24/7 show pronto. What did you think of Outside the Cage? I mean, it was a little different than the usual countdown shows. Not too different, but they seem to really have gotten great sound bites out of the guys. I mean, for the Filo Sonnen fight, I mean, Chael Sonnen was talking about putting a picture of Paulo in his shoe and stepping on it. I thought some of the stuff that they had between Doug Marshall and Ariel Gandula was great. What did you think of the show? And not to mention, I can't believe I'm missing out on this one, Jens Pulver, Cub Swanson. Those two seem to have had developed a great rivalry now, especially because of Pulver pulling out of their last fight, or their supposed last fight that was supposed to go down in September. What did you think of the offering by the WEC and with Outside the Cage?
I didn't mind it. It was good. It was pretty standard. And I think this is it shows the same flaw that the standard countdown shows do, which is basically that, you know, fights can interest people, but it's personalities that really interest people. So it's the idea that, sure, they were selling Jens Pulver versus Cub Swanson. They weren't saying, here's Jens Pulver as a person, here's interesting things about him, here's things that make you care about him, so he's not just some 5'4" creepy redneck guy with bad teeth. You know, like they're really missing the whole bandwagon on what really will involve people. If you sell these people and you get people to care or like about them, and that's what 24/7 was all about. I mean, 24/7 barely talked about, you know, Hatton's skill and Hatton's experience and what Hatton had been up to as a boxer. It just sold his story and what he was up to and his lifestyle and how he lived. So overall, that's the big problem. And it goes all the way up to the countdown shows with, you know, Liddell versus Silva. They never talk about these guys as people. I mean, how many people even know that Wanderlei Silva has kids, you know? They're just missing the mark. And I mean, I enjoy their promotion. I enjoyed the show. And you know, it got me more educated as to what's coming up as far as these guys' training and their styles. But it didn't make me care more about anyone. So, I mean, so chalk that up to kind of a neutral feel for me.
All right. Oh, and speaking of Jens Pulver, how do you expect him to do on Wednesday night? This is going to be a fight for him at 145 pounds. Hasn't fought at that weight in quite some time, and he's going up against a guy, Cub Swanson, 11-1.
I don't know. I think people are counting Pulver out. I mean, he got knocked out quick by Joe Lauzon, and then he got subbed by BJ Penn. Now, you know, the Lauzon thing was pretty fluky, and the BJ Penn loss is respectable. So it's like people who are counting this guy out, I think it's pretty short-sighted. I mean, I haven't seen anything from Cub Swanson that makes me think that he can hang with Jens Pulver, and add that onto the fact that they're saying, and who knows if this is true or not, but they're saying that Cub Swanson is going to try and stand with Pulver, which is just stupid. So, I mean, it really, I don't think, you know, this is one of those things where people are really banking on the idea that Jens Pulver is over, but I don't think he's over. I don't think he's over yet. And I don't think that if he was a guy like Cub Swanson would be a guy that would, you know, put him away even. So I'm giving it to Pulver for sure.
Are you expecting Pulver to be facing the current reigning and defending champion at the featherweight division, Uriah Faber, at the next WEC show, or maybe in a couple of shows down the line? Are you expecting Faber to come out on top against Jeff Curran?
You know, it's a tricky one, because Curran's got a lot of experience, and I, you know, I haven't seen a lot of Curran. All I've seen is his first fight in the WEC, and he looked terrible in that fight. So, I mean, that's the thing, is that Curran on paper has everything he needs to beat Uriah Faber, but from what I've seen of Curran, I don't have very much faith in the ability that he's going to do it. Faber just seems like the guy to beat, and it seems like, you know, even no matter what comes his way, he's just ready for it, he's better prepared, and he's more confident, and he just is able to put it together. Well, I think Curran, you know, struggled with his debut, and, you know, if you're struggling in your WEC debut, where's the proof that you're not going to struggle against in your second WEC fight? And against a guy like Uriah Faber, you know, you can't win if you're not 100%.
The final title match of the three is for the light heavyweight title in the WEC, Doug Marshall against my boy, Ariel Gandula. I mean,
what a ridiculous name, eh?
His name alone has just made him my favorite fighter. What should we expect from these two guys? I mean, both of them together have less than 20 fights under their belt. Gandula, largely unknown in MMA. Does he have any shot at becoming the new champ?
Well, I mean, do you have Ariel's record in front of you? Isn't it something silly like 4-4
yeah.
and 0 or
it's 4-0-1?
Yeah, I mean,
but at the same time, Doug Marshall is only 6-2.
This is true, I suppose. I keep forgetting that fact, but I mean, taking a look at what the Rhino has done. I mean, I've seen three of the Rhino's fights, and this guy is the real deal. I mean, the only other fighter that I've jumped on as quickly as the Rhino is Brock Larson. I really like Brock Larson after seeing what he did in his first WEC fight. So, I mean, as far as the WEC building stars, I mean, the Rhino is a star as far as I'm concerned. The way he fights, the style he fights, really aggressive, but at the same time, you know, he gets himself in bad situations, but he gets himself out of them. So, I mean, this Ariel guy, I don't know anything about. I look at his record, and I just, I've seen his one other fight in the WEC, and to me, it just didn't seem like anything. To me, it underlines the fact that, you know, they don't have a lot of really skilled guys in the wings to come in and challenge for these belts, because to me, it just seems like a little bit of a weak matchup.
Is it safe to say that you won't be making any bets for this card?
No, I mean, I don't know enough about any of these guys. We always got to go for someone that we're really big fans with. So, I mean, we're always looking for a guy to beat Uriah Faber because we hate his guts. But, you know, there's nobody that we feel confident enough about to put, like, anything serious on the line. And even then, it would have to be against something good, and it would have to be built up, you know. There's a whole process to these bets. We only do one every 4 months or so.
Right, yeah, you don't want to just hotshot one a couple of days before a card. The payoff would be horrible. The last question before we let you go, we have to ask you this every time we speak to you. How's the training, the big Battle of the Blogs fight? We're expecting it in May of 08 or April of 08 or sometime around that vicinity. I mean, are you pumped? I'm sure you heard the interview with Sam on our website last week. Give us some thoughts on the big fight that's sure to come.
Oh, everything's going great. The training's going great. I'm at the gym twice a day, five times a day, and I'm training. I'm going to jiu-jitsu classes and stuff, training twice a week. And then as soon as I come back from Christmas vacation, it's going to be two times jiu-jitsu, and then two times I'm going to work on my Muay Thai because I hear that Sam is more of a kickboxer than anything else. So I got to, you know, shore my offense and my defense up like that. And you know, past that, I got a couple secret weapons and a couple of secret training partners that I'm in the process of securing for the new year. So, I mean, things are rolling. Things are great. I'm very, very happy with the way things are going. I can't wait to really kick it into overdrive after the vacation.
And you'll be bringing a belt, right? I mean, Sam wasn't too happy about the thought of you bringing a belt to the fight, but you will, in fact, have a belt there, right?
This is going to be the most beautiful belt. This isn't going to be like a cheap little crappy piece of crap. This is going to be a really nice belt. It's probably going to be nicer than the belt of the organization that we fight for. So, I mean, all of these other fighters are going to be, yeah, you know what? Sam made a valid point. It makes a mockery to these guys here who have been working really hard, training and fighting and all of this. But you know what? They could make their own belt if they want to.
Any news on which promotion will be televising or sanctioning the bout?
Not really. I mean, Sam's the guy that's working on that. I think I think it's pretty much a go. I think we've got someone in the pocket who's interested in doing it, who doesn't like me, who wants to see me destroyed and likes Sam's chances. So I think we've got an interested party that's going to be putting it on. So things seem like they're lined up, and all we have to do is, I think, like maybe another month or so down the road, they're going to lock it up. We just got to sort out the terms and see where the hype is at that point and see what we can get for it.
All right, just another big thing to look forward to come 2008. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us here on JerryPark.com to talk Ultimate Fighter Finale, WEC, and your big upcoming bout against Sam Kaplan. Keep doing what you're doing over at FightLinker.com.
You too, man.